from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Andersons Climbers Facility. He's in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, just one story, USDA has updated its annual land values and cash rents report. We'll have complete details. And then we'll hear all about why the Doha round of the WTO failed. Oh, and don't forget that Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago, on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby September wheat down 14 and a quarter cents today. $7.65 and three quarters the settlement price, down 14 and a quarter for September wheat. December soft red, $7.90 and three quarters, 14 cents lower. The March at 8.14 and three quarters, down 14. September wheat in Kansas City at $7.96, 10 and one half cents lower. September corn futures, $5.08 in Chicago, 17 and a quarter lower. December at $5.27 and three quarters, down 17 and one quarter. In the March futures, $5.47 and one quarter, down 17 and a half cents. May contract in the corn pit at $5.59 and three quarters, down 18 cents. August soybean futures, $12.20 and a half cents, down 42. September, $12.32 and a half, down 45 and a half. And November soybeans at $12.22, down 47 cents. January futures, $12.39 and three quarters, down 47 cents. August bean meal futures settled $334 even, down $13.50. August bean oil at $51.48, down $1.50 on the afternoon. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange at $115.50 or 15 cents higher. October at $108, or rather at $117.20, up a dime. August live cattle at $102.35, $2.12.5 higher. And the October at $108.55, up $1.65. August lean hogs at $84.40, up $1.62.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. Nearby September crude oil futures at $118.60 are now down 57 cents a barrel. October futures at $118.90 are 32 cents lower. September ethanol futures at $2.15.9 are 4 7/10 lower. And natural gas is trading the September contract at $8.80.09, that is. 8 6/10 higher for the afternoon. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at 3.23 3/10, 4 8/10 lower. And the propane futures are trading 4 cents lower at $1.74.5. Gold futures of the August contract, $875.60 an ounce, now down $3 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,680, down 65 points for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar trading at 74.24. is up 0.36, and the CRB index at 397.78 is down 0.63 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. From our own Mike Sola, he says tonight in the south, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy with occasional showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy across the area with a few patchy areas of patchy fog. Lows will range from 58 in northeastern Indiana to 70 in far southern Illinois. Tomorrow, Mike says, partly to mostly sunny skies, a few scattered showers possible in the south. Highs tomorrow will range from a lovely 78 in northern Indiana to 87 in southern Illinois. The showers and a few thunderstorms will end in the far south in the entire two-state area, and that will extend right on through the weekend with some mostly dry weather. There will be some instability, though, possibly late into the weekend and early into next week, but that'll impact only a few small localized areas.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the futures markets is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And tell me about the losses in the marketplace today, and I think there are some things from the wire service that we need to cover to begin with.
Yeah, one thing that rather a somber day here, and it did come across Reuters Newswire, a very respected news service for the financial world. It said talk of a commodity fund being forced to liquidate its position by the Chicago Board of Trade added pressure on corn and soybean futures Wednesday among the broad sell-off in commodities, traders said. Traders said the fund, which they could not identify, was asked to liquidate roughly 39,000 contracts of soybeans, 40,000 contracts of corn. Traders speculated that the fund began liquidating its position early this week with the brunt of the selling done on Wednesday. A spokesman for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange had no comment. Markets are down because of talk about forced liquidation in beans and corn. Somebody was forced out, a board trader mentioned. The exchange can force liquidation when a firm cannot meet its margin calls or when a trader's classification changes from, say, a hedger or to a speculator, which would change the size of the positions permitted and margin requirements. It did go limit down and soybeans to 70 cents, and it was basically, you know, we did see a sell-off quite sharp in the corn market. The markets did rebound a little bit later in the day, but this is a very sizable position. And, you know, the last time, you know, I remember something like this was, of course, when the Cook Industry debacle, the big grain company in Memphis, Tennessee, was on the wrong side of the old crop, new crop soybean spread, and there was massive liquidation. It will be interesting to see how quick this news will be absorbed into the marketplace. Whether there's more to come, that's unknown. And then, of course, the other thing we have to talk about is you know, Informa this morning said, you know, we do have a pretty good corn crop based on their survey, and the only question is will the crop get larger? And, you know, those are all unknowns into the marketplace. The stock market is acting good today, up another 75 points, which does tell the world that, you know, the markets are stabilizing.
Well, there are two different questions dealing with the Reuters story to begin with. I guess it's one question, but is your thought here that it would be more of a commercial that was caused to liquidate, or actually a commercial? Is it more of the opportunity that it was margin call that basis
liquidation?
I think it was
definitely a commodity fund that specializes in commodity fund trading. And you know, what the bottom line is, was it one that was just long and played that type of deal, and or was it an actual trader? And I don't know the status, but those are very, very large positions, and it took a lot of money to trade it. And my hunch is it's not just, you know, they just didn't trade corn, soybeans, wheat, cattle, and hogs. I'm sure the Dow and maybe even stocks were also, you know, covered here. We have seen and heard stories about large oil traders and oil that have been forced to liquidate, and it does show that the commodity funds and the you know, are, maybe I should change it, where the actual exchanges are forcing the clearing companies to be very watchful of this, and obviously it was big enough and a larger concern that it was done rather quickly.
Well, I guess my question here really is this: if it was margin call, that's one thing. If it was caused because CFTC changed.
I think it was margin.
So you don't think it had to be? It was involved with changing them from a spec position to something else?
No, I think it was strictly margin.
Okay,
personal opinion.
Well, then that's kind of a one day, potentially one item event, and has less of an impact, I suppose, over time. Or am I reading that wrong?
Well, I think that with this, this idea of liquidating out of the crude oil market and out of commodities, and also, the idea that we'll have a crop production report, I think it's basically a deal where all deals back to big money center problems with the hedge funds and also the subprime issue and the general lack of liquidity in the financial markets that's causing this. This is a cold that's being spread to commodity industry and the financial community.
Okay, now finally, why don't you take up those Informa numbers for me? A 12.3 on the corn and a 3 billion bushel soybean crop.
Well, 155.5 bushel corn crop, and they did find another 400,000 acres of planted acres in the corn fields. It does, in their opinion, have a carryover next year of 1.4 billion bushels of corn carryover. It does force the issue still that we have to plant another 6 million acres of corn and soybeans next year, and that's the supporting factor in the equation. But at the meantime, this 1.4 billion bushel corn carryover is adequate for the marketplace, and I think it was another reason why we did see, corn and soybeans trade lower today.
Okay, Paul, anything else to add before I let you go?
Well, have a profitable day, and we hope the market stabilizes because we don't think it's it's a sad sell-off, but, hey, it's a part of the function of the marketplace, and hopefully the problem will be solved quickly.
Thanks much.
Have a nice day.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, just one item. We'll go through the land values and cash rents 2008 summary that was released this month by the United States Department of Agriculture. Under the agricultural land values highlights, it says farm real estate values, a measurement of the value of all land and buildings on farms around the nation, averaged $2,350 an acre on January the 1st of 2008. That was up 8.8% from 2007. The $2,350 per acre, of course, is a record high and $190 more than a year earlier. Both cropland and pasture land values for 2008 were record highs. Cropland values rose by 10% to $2,970 an acre from the previous high of $2,690 from last year. Pasture values were up 6% to $1,230 an acre. Regional increases in the average value of farm real estate range from 1.6% in the Northeast region to 15.5% in the Northern Plains states. The highest farm real estate values remained in the Northeast region, where development pressure continues to push the average value of farmland to $5,080 an acre. The Northern Plains region had the lowest farm real estate value at $1,110 an acre. Still, that was up 15.5% from the previous year. In the Corn Belt region, cropland values rose 14.8% to $4,260 an acre. On that note, nationally, cash rents per acre paid to landlords for cropland rose $11 last year, or 13%, while pasture rents increased $1. That's up 8.3% from the 2008 crop and grazing year. Cropland cash rents paid in 2008 averaged $96 an acre around the nation, compared with $85 in the year before. Pasture cash rents averaged $13 an acre, compared with $12 per acre for 2007. The increase in cropland and pasture land rental rates are the result, USDA says, of producers receiving strong commodity prices. Farmland cash rents increased $14 an acre to $140 in the Corn Belt region and $6 an acre to $64 in the Northern Plains region. The Corn Belt and the Northern Plains regions account for slightly more than one-half of cash-rented cropland acreage in the United States. The major corn and soybean-producing states of Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa experienced increases of 13%, 13%, and 18%, respectively, for cropland cash rents. Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa cropland cash rents averaged $160 in Illinois, $135 in Indiana, and $165 an acre in Iowa. If you'd like to see the complete USDA report, just search for land values and cash rents on the internet. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please take time to visit our website when you get the opportunity. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this program and Commodity Week. They're available as MP3 files that you can listen to directly from the website. Or if you prefer, you can have them delivered to your computer as a podcast. That all happens automatically. There are instructions right there at willag.org. And don't forget, while you're on our site, to visit the right-hand side of the page and subscribe to our weekend marketing newsletter. It's a good one, and it's easy to subscribe to. Just hit that little subscribe button. If you don't like it, that's fine. You can always unsubscribe just as easily. It's all on the right-hand side of the page. It's at willag.org. It's worth the time, and it's worth at least one look, and I'll bet you'll be hooked at willag.org. Up next, you know, the failure of the Doha round of the WTO could have broad consequences for farmers right here in the Midwest. I'll have more with an agricultural policy expert. The World Trade Organization negotiations broke down because of a dispute between the United States and India, says University of Illinois ag policy expert Bob Thompson. He says the U.S. pushed for more open and free access to the world markets. Developing countries, India in particular, wanted a way to protect their food and agricultural producers.
But they wanted to be able to raise import duties on agricultural products above the cap that we have today in situations when world market prices were falling, and then they had a huge surge in imports of more than 40% from one year to the next. On the other hand, the developing countries were demanding that the U.S. make real cuts in the supports to agriculture that are linked to the production of specific commodities. And our farm bill sent the wrong message. We raised some loan rates and target prices. Well, we did cut some others. We increased the potential budget cost when the acre program was added, with the price trigger being the last, or the price factor being the average of the last 2 years' prices, which would move it up pretty fast. And so at the end of the day, the U.S., I think, in this political season, rightly said we can't go as far as other countries want in making cuts so soon after the Farm Bill was passed. And India and China said we can't go along with the deal unless we have the flexibility to protect our consumers, or to protect our small farmers if there were a significant reduction in market prices.
In short, the U.S. said we want free market access, and India said we want the right to put up a barrier in times of very low prices. And the elephant in the room was the 2008 U.S. Farm Bill, which is in violation of the last agreed-upon set of international trade rules. It was called the Uruguay Round of the GATT back in the early 1990s.
It's important for everybody to keep in mind that the Uruguay Round agreement at the end of the last round of international trade negotiations set international trade law until such time as some future round of negotiations agrees to change it. And this round did not reach reach any closure. So the Uruguay Round Agreement will continue to be the international trade law that sets the rules of the road of international trade. The U.S. Lost a case that was taken to the WTO by Brazil against our cotton program. Brazil alleged that our LDPs and countercyclical payments had stimulated larger production of cotton than would otherwise have occurred. And when this was pushed out into the world market, including with the use of some export subsidies, that it depressed the world market price because we are such a large producer of cotton. Since Brazil's cotton growers get their entire income from the world market price, they said this is unfair, and they said the U.S. should either change that policy or pay compensation. We didn't change the policy in the Farm Bill, and Brazil is now pursuing its demand for about $3 billion a year compensation for the losses that their cotton growers incurred as a result of the 2002 Farm Bill cotton program. Our other grain and oilseed programs are vulnerable to challenge because they basically have the same structure as the cotton program.
Thompson contends despite the high prices today that keep the U.S. government payments from being triggered, countries can file cases based on past situations and are quite likely to do so. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. On the line with us this afternoon from the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, that belongs to the Andersons, is Matt Blaisdell. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon.
When I talked to your compadre at the Andersons here in Champaign County on Monday, we had suffered a fairly good loss in the marketplace. But today we're down 57 cents for the week in corn and $1.43, I think, in the soybeans on the week. That's correct. What do you say?
You know, I think that there's just a lack of bullish news to keep this market from really falling out of bed. Rumor of talk today of some of the CFTC selling some of these hedge funds that, you know, what's their can be their total exposures to the market. Got some of the funds, I think, a little scared, starting to pull their money out of commodities. And, you know, in general, that doesn't really bode well for corn and beans. Also, you know, a couple of pretty bearish numbers on the yields from some private guys this week that kind of got the market excited.
Yeah, they inform a 12-3 crop. You think it's there?
You know, I think it's after you get in the field, and what I'm hearing from a lot of guys, once you get in the field, you know, going down 70 miles per hour down the interstate looking field looks really great. But once you get in there, it's hit or miss on the ear development. And then also, especially around here, we had quite a bit of water damage. So especially in the middle of the field where you got the low-lying areas, that crop just isn't there. So I'm a little skeptical on that number.
What are your bids for the day?
Bids on corn, 478 for Climbers corn. New crop, 483. Beans, 1225. New crop, 1147.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Matt Blaisdell. He's with the Andersons, located at the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, about the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Raspberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1782, Andreas Sigmund Margraf died, a German chemist. He discovered beet sugar, which led to the development of the modern sugar industry. In 1783, John Heathcote was born, an English inventor. He developed and patented the lace net machine, which was capable of the complex and yet delicate motions needed to produce lace. His machines made lace hundreds of times faster than it could be manufactured by hand. In 1794, on this day, marks the Whiskey Rebellion. protesting the 1791 federal tax on distilled spirits. A large gathering of rebels in western Pennsylvania burned the regional tax inspector's home. President George Washington ordered 13,000 troops to the area, but by the time of their arrival, the opposition had disappeared. And in 1834, Joseph Marie Jacquard died, a French silk weaver. He was the inventor of the Jacquard programmable power loom for brocaded fabric. His use of punch cards was later applied to census data and eventually input cards in early computers. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a bit cooler here than it has been for the past few days.
Kind of feels good, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Will we stay that way?
Well, it looks like we will manage to stay in a milder weather pattern for a while. I don't think we're going to see any kind of real substantial heat anytime soon. A good 10 days will go by before we have an opportunity for such conditions to occur. And it looks like precipitation will be somewhat limited for the next several days across the region. But as we get out into next week, a good opportunity for rain and thunderstorms will come back across the region as a more significant reinforcing shot of cooler air comes across the region. That frontal system will likely generate shower and thunderstorm activity starting around maybe Tuesday for the eastern Corn Belt and continue on into probably as far out as Thursday. And then we'll see some drier and cooler air really settle into the region, possibly. The midday models stay probably overdoing some of the coolness and some of the rainfall, but it still looks like that we will still have a good environment for crop development across the region. Even with the drying that occurs over the next 5 days or so, we're going to have favorable subsoil moisture still hanging on with us in most cases. The exceptions might be in the northwestern Corn Belt, where there's not a lot of precipitation coming up and the subsoil is already somewhat short. But no critically dry conditions are likely across the Midwest over this next 5 to 7 days for sure, and probably not for 10 days either.
If you take a look a bit further out, last week you discussed some work you'd been doing about frost and early frost, and have you delved further into it still?
Well, just kind of reinforcing what I had done previously, I don't see any reason at the moment to jump all over a potential for an early frost or freeze event in the southern portions of the Canada Prairie or the northern U.S. plains, including the northern Midwest. I think most of these areas have a fairly good chance of seeing a little bit later than normal frost and freezes this year. I say that at the same time I'm looking at the midday model run today, and there was an increase in cold air building up in far northern Canada, but I really think that is nothing to pay attention to at this point in time. I feel pretty confident about what I'm saying, except for maybe in the southeastern states, but that'll occur very late in the growing season, obviously, and would have a very minor impact, most likely.
And then very quickly, a little less than a minute left, I suppose our colleagues to the south are itching to get into the field in the next month or so. How are they going to set up for that?
Well, it looks like Argentina, to start with, although they don't plant quite as early as Brazil, Argentina is going to have the biggest dry problem, I think, to start with. They've still been in a drought. I think they haven't had a great deal of rainfall in central and northern parts of that country since probably late April or early May. Been very, very dry across those areas. So it's going to be important that rain falls significantly in the next few weeks across Argentina. Southern Argentina is not bad, though. Most of the wheat areas down there in Buenos Aires are doing relatively well. But for Brazil, I think we're going to do relatively well there. I think we'll come into the growing season in a relatively normal weather pattern, and it means that we should get some timely precipitation to occur in time to start the process of getting these crops into the ground. Corn will be first to go in, and that will probably start in late September.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too, Drew. That's Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Please visit our website where you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain reports, and weather right there on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.